You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. My co-host, as always, is Sun Political reporter Andrew Doman.
Hello.
Today, the show will cover healthcare in Nevada, including the state's dismal rankings and possible solutions on the table to improve the quality of care in the Silver State. Joining us later in the show will be Las Vegas Weekly reporter Aaron Ryan, who has written about plans for a medical school at UNLV. But first, we'll discuss some healthcare developments Andrew has covered at the beginning of this new year. First, it's become a cliche that Nevada is at the bottom of the good list and top of the bad list when it comes to rankings on educations and the like. But in the case of the number of physicians available to residents, the cliche rings true. Andrew, a legislative committee recently heard a report from state healthcare experts on the shortage of doctors in the state. What did they find?
Well, I think you kind of answered it right there. They found, you know, there's still a shortage. Nevada ranks almost last in many cases on the numbers of doctors and nurses in the state when you look at it on a per person basis, right? Mm-hmm. The number of doctors per, I think the measurement was 100,000 people, and we just don't rank well when compared to other states. In some cases, we're 51st, trailing even Washington D.C.
And is this a long-standing problem? Have we always been at the bottom of the list? Have we been going down recently, going up? What are sort of the trends?
So while I was reporting on this story, a longtime kind of legislative observer sent me an email saying how a lot of this debate is really just kind of stale almost. He sent me a link to a 1989 study looking at the shortage of nurses in Nevada. Last week, we heard kind of the same thing. Registered nurses were 50th in the nation, nurse practitioners 41st, certified nurse midwives 44th, certified nurse anesthesiists 51st, licensed practical nurses 49th. This committee went over this information that is in some ways not new at all.
And so in terms of the committee, what were they telling the legislators? Is this expected to get worse or better? Is there And what does the Affordable Care Act, will that impact sort of the need for physicians here in the state?
Right. So that is what's new. President Obama passed his major health care law, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, in 2010. And a lot of those provisions in that huge law are just, they're starting to come online now, right? Mm-hmm. The mandate to have insurance for individuals has kicked in. The Medicaid expansion in this state has kicked in. The practical effect of that is that more people are going to add health insurance, and once they have it, they might want to use it. If you don't grow the number of doctors and nurses you have to serve all these people who newly have health insurance, then your doctor shortage problem only gets worse.
And did they diagnose the problem? I mean, why don't we have enough doctors? I mean, it seems across the board, as you said, general surgeons, specialty surgeons, orthopedic surgeons, primary care physicians, nurses, we're in the 40s or 50s in terms of the rankings across the board. So why such a general problem here in the state?
All right. When you start to ask the why question, that's where it gets complicated. Because as I was saying earlier, this has been kind of a longstanding problem. So if there had been an easy fix, presumably someone would have fixed it already. But instead, it's just this real complicated issue where you have kind of multiple factors at play, including a state – or the federal government setting aside a limited amount of money for the states to train doctors in graduate medical education. You also have issues of other states also putting aside money to train doctors where we don't. So for the med student out there who is in considerable debt from going to med school, he or she says, okay, do I want to go finish my education and do training in a hospital in a state that's going to help me pay back my loan, or do I want to come to a state like Nevada where that assistance is not available? So there's just a lot of factors going on here as to why we continue to rank poorly in the number of healthcare workers we have.
And obviously this is a committee presenting to some legislators. Was there any particular reaction from the legislators? I mean, did they say some actions they plan to take? Did they just receive the report and move on? And
there's no one really saying this is good news, but it all comes down to money. A lot of these solutions involve paying for one thing or another. Legislators kind of have are in a difficult position here. If the state budget isn't growing, if the economy isn't growing and putting more tax revenues into the state budget that will come up again in 2015, then they're going to not have the money there to pay for some of these things that were talked about at the meeting, including perhaps having a dedicated fund to help repay student loans for nurses or doctors, to help attract them, to incentivize them to come to Nevada, things like that, or to open up more. They're called residency slots. So those are funded positions that are available for students to go and kind of on the last leg of their journey to become a doctor, to go actually work in a hospital. And of course, when you work in a hospital, that costs money. Someone has to pay. Often the hospital doesn't make enough money back on that. So you have either the state or the federal government who ultimately ends up putting up some money for that. So All these solutions cost money. Legislators are weighing that.
And moving on, we're speaking with Andrew Doman, Sun Political Reporter, about some healthcare issues in the start of the new year. And last year, one of the big stories in terms of healthcare in the state was the Ross and Neal Psychiatric Facility, which came under fire after it was revealed that staff were busing patients out of state with little support or really concern for what their end result was, where they ended up on the you know, across, once they were across state lines. And there have been several reviews of the facility, and the governor, Brian Sandoval, has appointed a panel to look at the state's mental health care system. Now, you just reported recently that the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services reviewed Ross and Neal. What did they find in their most recent inspection?
So let's just put this in context a little bit. This has sort of been going on almost for a year now, and really through reporting from Sacramento Bee, two reporters there have kind of led the charge on this and have shown how patients were improperly bused out of state and ended up all over the country just kind of on these Greyhound buses where they didn't receive proper follow-up care. And it turns out also in subsequent reporting ended up committing a lot of crimes.
Right.
So that brought the heat down on this hospital, the federal government, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, like you said, basically the agency that oversees all hospitals in the United States. They came in and inspected the psychiatric hospital in Las Vegas, knowing that there were problems out there that had been reported on. And they said, well, you guys aren't in compliance with a lot of stuff, and you better fix it. And that's basically what happened last year.
And they lost their accreditation, right?
Right, right. Not from the federal government. There's a separate group out there that sort of accredits hospitals and says sort of a star rating, like a quality assurance that this hospital is a good one. So that they lost that. What was at stake with this was the federal money that comes in, because the federal government pays out money to hospitals to provide care through Medicare. And they were in Ross and Neal is in danger of losing that. The group that oversees Ross and Neal, the state agency, the Southern Nevada Adult Mental Health Services, was in danger of losing that funding, basically as a punishment for not following the rules that the federal government had set up for proper care.
And now this most recently, though, they did a follow-up inspection, correct?
Right. So again, last spring, they were found to be out of compliance, and the state had to submit basically a plan to correct the problems, saying, hey, we're going to fix this. And the federal government said, okay, fine. We see your plan, but we want to inspect you later to make sure, yeah, you guys actually did this. So they came in, the federal government came in and did a follow-up inspection in November of last year. And they found, hey, some of these problems still exist, despite the plan that was in place to correct them. They're continuing. So that's what ultimately happened in the announcement last week, was the federal government came out and said again, hey, you guys, you're out of compliance. There's fire code violations, life safety issues, problems with quality assurance controls, nursing services, and a bunch of other deficiencies. Get your act together was kind of the message. And they have until January 22nd to submit another plan that says, hey, we really are going to correct this.
And so the federal money hasn't been officially taken away yet, but it's still sort of on the chopping block.
It's definitely on the chopping block.
Hung over their heads.
They have until April. Their funding will continue through April at the very least.
And what were some of the specific violations that mentioned in the report? Did they give any detailed?
Well, there were two reports. So one has to do with this federal law providing for specifically for emergency type care, and there was another report dealing with just general sort of violations, and there's just a whole kind of a whole list of them. Some of them are rather technical in terms of whether or not they appropriately transferred a patient from one department or another. It seems as though they didn't keep an emergency room log, kind of a record of what's going on in the emergency room when patients come in and are kind of in a mental health crisis state. They've also found that just the physical hospital is kind of out of compliance with the national life safety and fire code. So that's sort of a disturbing finding there, because the state has invested millions of dollars in trying to upgrade these facilities and expand them. So to find that the current facilities are not meeting life safety codes is a little bit troubling.
Right. And it sounds like it will take a significant investment to get Ross and Neil up to standard, right?
Right. So the state has poured millions of dollars into this hospital, and the governor is saying how shocked he was to find that a lot of these patients who had been bussed out of state and committed, in some cases, really horrendous crimes, set up this whole panel, a commission to look at this. So presumably, when the state again looks at its budget in 2015, because the legislature only meets every other odd on the odd numbered years, there'll be more requests for funding. They got to figure out some way to fix the problem, and in a lot of cases that requires money.
Mm. And so now you mentioned this previously, but so now Ross and Neil has to come back to the federal government by end of January and with a plan on how to address these most current issues raised, correct?
Yeah, so in a way it's almost like Groundhog Day. This is sort of a repeat of what happened last year in the sense that the federal government said, hey, you guys are out of compliance. You guys aren't following these rules, these laws here that we have governing hospitals and how to treat patients safely. And the same thing is happening again. They failed an inspection, and now they need to come back and with a plan and say, we're going to fix it.
And now this has also become, obviously, it's a political issue. It's sort of a scandal. Like you said, the Sacramento Bee has done some really outstanding reporting, and it seems like it gets worse every time they have a new story, from just the busing to now busing people who then committed crimes when they were, you know, bussed out of state. And I believe Tick Sagerbloom, one of our state legislators, even wrote an op-ed piece in the Sacramento Bee taking the governor to task for not responding well enough. Is this an issue that could you know, you're in touch, obviously, you follow the political scene. Is this something that could affect the governor in his reelection campaign?
I imagine it'll certainly come up as a topic on the campaign trail. Governor Sandoval, of course, is a Republican who's running for reelection right now. He doesn't yet have a Democrat to oppose him, so it's kind of hard.
So it's not that much of an issue.
Right? It's hard to say what the campaign issues will be when there's no one out there,
right,
even framing the debate in any way. But thus far, Governor Sandoval has been pretty effective in kind of deflecting any kind of criticism, or at least having it stick to him personally. And to be fair, it is this crisis is kind of removed from the governor by several degrees. It's happening in one division, the Southern Nevada Adult Mental Health Services of the Health Department, whose budget he does approve, but there's no kind of direct evidence that shows that Brian Sandoval wrote an email that said patients should be bust out of state, or a kind of email that says that budgets need to be cut no matter what without regard to basic quality control or patient safety. There's nothing that really has, at least thus far, has directly linked Brian Sandoval, the governor, to this problem at Ross and Neil. Mm-hmm.
Do you see Tick Sagerbloom's op-ed in the Sacramento Bee as an indicator that he's at least pondering putting his hat in the race for governor?
Right, so State Senator Tick Sagerbloom, Democrat in Las Vegas, he's one of those guys who's talked about and as a possible candidate for governor. You know, to be honest, he's sort of fanned the flames himself in putting himself out there and saying, hey, you know, Democrats, I will run for governor if no one else does. Because it's appeared that Democrats have kind of had a difficult time finding a candidate for governor. And Tick Sagerbloom has put himself out there and said, yeah, I'll run. And certainly by writing an op-ed in the Sacramento Bee that was partnered kind of with this whole series of stories about how the patients who were bussed out of Ross and Neal, some of them ended up committing some really awful crimes. For Tick Sagerbloom to do that and kind of hammer the governor, that could be an indication that he's positioning himself to run against the governor.
All right, you're listening to 91.5 KUNV. This is Neon Eden, and joining us in the studio now is Las Vegas Weekly reporter Aaron Ryan, who recently wrote about the plan between UNLV and University of Nevada, Reno, to start a medical school here in Southern Nevada. And they had an agreement that, you know, the North had the medical school and the South had the law school and everything should remain separate, but apparently they've worked out an agreement. And so what brought us to this point? Why was it important to, I guess, work out this memorandum of understanding, and what led the regents, I guess, to approve and go after a medical school in Southern Nevada?
Well, it was actually described to me as 40 years of misery between the two schools. Apparently, this has been really contentious for a generation. The fact that the State School of Medicine was founded up north, but does rely on the South for a lot of the clinical training in our network of hospitals. And, you know, the argument for a long time has been Southern Nevada needs a medical school for the health impacts to the community. And, you know, there is some truth to that. The ways that having a med school can improve access to healthcare through free clinics based on the university campus, just the standard of care based on having that sort of academic side of medicine there and ways that it can reach into the community. But I think that, you know, based on my conversations with doctors and administrators of med schools, that's really not as significant a factor in the quality of healthcare or the availability of healthcare as graduate medical education. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at a medical student and they think, oh, it's a doctor. And this is just not the case. These are, you know, students who are learning the craft. And even when they're residents, I mean, in the first couple years, they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off, just trying to survive and figure out what they're doing. And, you know, so having the med school here in Las Vegas, you know, there would be benefits, obviously, but investing in that versus investing in more infrastructure and more positions for residents, there's just a really big difference in the impact.
That kind of confuses me, to be honest, because I was sitting in on a hearing the other week, and you have former Congresswoman Shelley Berkeley, who's now at Toro University in Henderson, kind of giving that some more clout, saying, well, we can really grow and add more medical students. There's, as you talked about, the plan now for UNLV to have a medical school. And I think Carolyn Goodman, the mayor of Las Vegas, said, well, put it right there in what they say is the medical district over by UMC in Las Vegas. So there's already kind of lobbying for even where this thing will be before the plan even gets off the ground. And then also at this meeting was someone from Roseman University, mm-hmm. and they just took over the old Nevada Cancer Institute building over on over in Summerlin, and they're submitting plans. And I think they may have already submitted plans in December to get the ball rolling on a process to start a med school for MDs, for allopathic physicians. Right. So why does everyone want to open a med school all of a sudden?
You know, I don't think it's all of a sudden. I think that, you know, Las Vegas apparently is the largest metro area in the United States that doesn't have an allopathic medical school. It does have an osteopathic medical school in Toro, which has made a difference. And, you know, there are a few more physicians practicing in the state.
But what's the difference, just real quick, osteopathic, sure. Allopathic?
Allopathic is, you know, the tradition of medicine going back hundreds and hundreds of years. And it's MD, the training is just slightly different as far as I understand it. There's an aspect of osteopathic medicine, which is much younger. It came about, I think, in the late 1800s. There was a kind of a renegade doctor who had some issues with the medical institution. And he said, you know, I see some problems here that I want to address. And in protest, I'm going to, you know, create this new institution. And, you know, it's definitely legitimate. But really, I mean, as far as classroom work and clinical, their skills are very comparable. I mean, I think that's something that's been a misconception kind of out there in the public, that there's really kind of a difference in quality between the two. And I don't see that at all.
And so what is the strategy laid out? I mean, how is this going to work in terms of developing a medical school at UNLV?
Oh, man. I mean, it's at this point, it's a huge mountain that they're going to be moving. And right now are just in the stages of beginning to form committees to talk about how to try to do it. I mean, it's going to be a huge thing to try to do. And then ultimately down the line, you know, 10 years maybe later, they're going to look at separating these medical schools into two completely independent institutions with their own charters and licenses and everything else. And that'll be great. And, you know, but I just, as far as I was told and as far as I can see, you know, having those medical students, you know, it will make an impact. That will mean that more doctors will probably stay in practice here. But the correlations between, you know, where you go to med school and where you do your residency, it's just so much higher, the odds that the doctors will stay and will contribute to healthcare here. And
the,
also,
the residency is kind of that last step, right?
Training. It's your training. Like, your learning is in school and your training is as a resident. And if we had more residencies and better residencies, we would not only keep more of our medical students, we would attract them from other places. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of the idea that we would just...
Why is that?
Just the options. I mean, the decision about where you practice is complicated. There's actually a match system. So when you're a fourth-year medical student and you're thinking about where you want to train, you have been doing away rotations at hospitals, you know, around the country potentially in your field, in your specialty. And you are kind of checking them out and they're checking you out. And it's almost like the Greek system where ultimately you make a list, a rank list, and you're like, this is my number one, this is my number two, this is my number three. They're doing the exact same thing. And all of that information goes into a system, and you match or you don't match. And sometimes you get your first choice, sometimes you get your third choice, sometimes you don't match at all. And in that situation, you scramble. And basically the open spots at, you know, various hospitals and other institutions say, hey, we've got some spots, and the remaining, you know, medical graduates are like, I'm going to go there, I'm going to try to go there, and it kind of all works out in the end. But, you know, that decision is based on more than just like, well, I did my, you know, school here or whatever. It's sort of based on what's the best, you know, training for your specialty, where do you maybe want to end up, if you can make those things line up. But again, it's the same for someone coming out of a residency program, you know, especially if they're very good and have a lot of options. You know, you never know why they decide to go where they go. But if we have more options overall, I mean, it just bodes well for us to keep more of our students and residents, and also to attract people from other places.
There's kind of some conventional wisdom out there, right, that where someone, kind of an aspiring doctor, does his training, does a residency, that's where that doctor or future doctor will likely end up opening a practice or practicing medicine in that community, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so, something that, I mean, allopathic and osteopathic physicians both say, you know, if you train them, you retain them. There's a strong link between the two. And Dean Schwenk up at University of Nevada, Reno, said that students who train here in Nevada are 80%, you know, more likely to stay.
So knowing that we have just this chronic shortage that seems to persist over the years in the number of doctors we have compared to other states, mm-hmm. and knowing also that these residents, these doctors in training, they tend to stay where they're trained, why don't we just train more?
Because we don't have the spots, like I said. And one of the things that I looked at with Dean Schwenk and also with Dean Foreman over at Toro is the idea that, especially in Southern Nevada, the density of for-profit hospitals is very high. Okay. And these hospitals, you know, supporting a graduate medical education program takes a lot of money. And Medicare reimbursement is a huge part of where that comes from. And it really doesn't, you know, you don't make a profit training physicians, essentially. You have to look at it, as Dean Schwenk said, as, you know, an investment in healthcare in the community or a pipeline of new staff for your hospital. You kind of have to take one for the team in a way and know that there's a great benefit, you know, to the community, but also potentially to you to do it. And this usually falls to county hospitals and, you know, public entities that just, you know, it's kind of their role. And one of the things that Toro did that was so trailblazing was have this partnership with Valley Hospital here, which is for profit, and create 84 residency positions for DOs here. And, you know, DOs can do both allopathic and osteopathic residencies, but they wanted to just make the landscape bigger. And it's been a really fantastic thing. It brought some specialties, training for some specialties that apparently we didn't have, you know, according to Dean Foreman. And the more of that can happen, and it sounds like there's discussion in the community of hospitals about doing more of this, it'll benefit us. But, you know, there's a lot of kind of question about how the Affordable Care Act is going to come out and how much funding they're going to get and whether it's going to be less. And so there's kind of trepidation about making commitment at this point, because the number of Medicare beds is like a huge factor in how much funding you get and whether you can even support a system like this. And Dean Foreman, he said that they've assessed, I think, half a dozen local hospitals that appear to have the bandwidth, you know, to support GME. But so far, you know, they're not biting. They're kind of just sitting back and waiting to see what happens.
Right, so you've got this incredibly complex system where you have the federal government on the one hand saying, we'll pay some money to train new doctors because there's a public interest in having doctors.
For sure.
You've got the state government also involved. You've got these private for-profit hospitals who say, hey, that's not really profitable, and these med schools like Toro who also want an outlet for their students to go and get some more training and a residency. What's it take to kind of get everyone?
If anybody knew that, it would probably be happening more. But, you know, I think all of these folks who are involved, everybody wants the same thing. I mean, whatever tradition you come from, whatever background or training you have, you know, these people want to care for Nevada. They want Nevadans to be healthier. They want to be able to provide more services. It is all about money. I mean, it's the state, as I've been told, has not been able to kind of up its investment significantly over the last couple decades. And you can really see the difference if you look regionally and kind of compare Nevada to places like Utah and California. And, you know, they have made that investment and their healthcare systems are healthier as a result. So, obviously the recession and political backbiting, you know, between North and South, there have been some things that have affected that investment, but we just, you know, just like we need for standard education, you know, we need more money for medical education as well. And who knows where it's going to come from.
Right. And when's the earliest we'll see medical students at UNLV?
They're saying 2017 for the first class. But that's if, you know, everything kind of goes through in the legislature the way it's supposed to. And we'll just have to see. But, you know, it will. I'm not trying to say that it won't have an impact. It definitely will. But it just seems like GME would have more of an impact.
Right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully it does progress because we can certainly use any new doctors.
Yes, we can.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Aaron Ryan, a reporter for the Las Vegas Weekly. Thanks for joining us.
For sure.
You've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. My co-host is Andrew Doman. I'm Tobin LePan, and our producer is Richard Riegel. Catch you next week.